Blog Talk Radio.
Here she comes, come,
the reality comes, shades on,
the real deal, here she comes,
the reality comes.
Hello. Let me see. Can you hear me clearly?
I do.
Awesome. Great. Well, first of all, let's just say happy Juneteenth to everyone. And there's so many celebrations going on. They've been going on all week since Thursday. I participated in a lot of them. There was even one yesterday for the city of Mesquite. But I just want to say thank you for taking out, doing such a monumental moment in time to be on the show to give your truth about mental health issues, the effect that it has on the mind of men and women. But we're going to specifically focus on men today because a lot of times women, we of course get all the attention, for lack of a better way of putting it. When it comes to any type of disease, any type of anything, we as women, we get our perks. We get it in. And now I want to talk about what happened with you. But before we do all of that, I know that they say the proper thing to do is get a bio and read your bio and do all of those things. And that is the proper thing to do. But of course, I am the reality coach and I do not do things as normal. And that is one of my biggest downfalls, and that's where I get into the most trouble with people that are trying to train a child up in the way that they should go. And that's basically what they're trying to do with me, train me up in the way that I should go. But, of course, I always do the opposite. But nonetheless, the reason why I put shades on, let me explain that to you while you have your sunglasses on, because in today's time, we have so many people who do not want to see the truth, although it's in plain view. But one thing we know, we can always hide the truth from our eyes, but our ears, we can't. We're not going to turn them off because if we don't want to see, we're definitely going to want to hear. And most of the time, most people that have blinders on, their hearing is very good. Their hearing is it's almost like superpower hearing. So that's why we have the sunglasses on. And then when we get ready to get into the real truth about what today's show is about, then we'll take our shades off. And every now and then you'll see me, Dr. Hardy, put my shades back on, because when it's some truth that I know that they really don't want to see, I will put them back on and let them know, oh, you may not want to see this, but you're getting ready to hear. And I put on the darkest shades that I could find. Most people are looking for me to have on a pair of fly, super cool shades. But no, I want people to know I don't have no room to see over here and no room to see up here. It is pitch black almost if it wasn't for the light, because I want people to know this is a dark, dark, hurtful, painful subject that we're getting ready to get into from someone who's not telling someone else's story, but her own journey through dementia with Daddy. And it's mentally mind-blowing. But before we do that, Dr. Hardy, can you give us a brief synopsis of who you are and why you do what you do?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the invite. Thank you for the welcome. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. I am Dr. Monica Hardy out of Florida.
Florida.
So we are in Florida and having a wonderful time in Florida. I describe myself, try to make it quick, preacher, teacher, speaker, author.
Well, that's quick.
Ministry. My business is Effective Enterprises, where I'm a professional writer and consultant. And I see basically five groups of people I write for. That is ministers, that is professionals. professionals, business owners, students, authors, and I'm helping them write and create all types of documents, everything from your resume to your business plan to your book. So I absolutely love what I do. I am also in full-time ministry. Monica Hardy Ministries is an expansion or extension of Love, Peace, and Joy Ministry of Jesus Christ that I pastored 10 years after my mother passed. But pre-COVID, the Lord told me to close the church and I will be functioning mobily. So I now do mobile ministry, go out and do speaking and outreach. I also write books myself, and the book we will be talking about today is book number 6. And so in addition, yes, I'm so blessed, number 6. So in addition to writing for you through my business, I'm also an author, and I call it my Healing Flow Ministry, where my desire is to equip and educate and empower and evangelize with excellence. I also have a school, the Kingdom Scholastic Center of Excellence. It is an adult academy where I prepare adults. They may already be working. They may decide I want to go back to school. So the purpose of the adult academy is to sharpen your skills. So if you're saying, I don't have a degree, I want to go to school, then the types of courses, writing, speaking, leadership, thinking courses will prepare you for your academic journey or prepare you for ministerial advancement or prepare you for a business promotion. So that's me in a nutshell. The business, the ministry, the school. Within the ministry, I have a women's mentorship, the all-encompassing woman. This makes you number 4, where I mentor women all over the world, as well as I have a kids broadcast every Wednesday, Kingdom Inspiration, Scholastic Strategies, where I do a broadcast very similar to this, and I empower people all over the world on ministry strategies, life strategies, you know, all types of strategies. So I absolutely enjoy what I do. I love people. This book today is called Caregivers, the Forgotten Patient. It was birthed from my journey of taking care of my father who had the unkind disease of Alzheimer's. So there's so much material out there on the disease itself, okay? But I did not see much out there for caregivers. What the caregiver is going through, what the caregiver is feeling. So this book was designed and written, number 1, to help me. It helped me get through some days. It helped give me some laughter when I really needed it. It helped take the edge off from frustration that I was feeling, frustration that people don't want to admit, as you say, shades on. We don't want to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. You know, the caregiver feel some kind of way sometimes. And because it's our loved one, we love them. Yes, we do. But this disease is also happening to us.
Wow.
So the book will highlight how we really feel. And I often say caregivers love in another language. So another caregiver would know exactly what you're talking about. But to someone else, they're going, oh, you have to understand. They don't what they're doing, and you're looking at them like a disease did not just curse me out, my loved one did. And where Satan forgot they did it, my feelings did hurt.
Wow. Well, let's hold on just a moment, because I know you got some nuggets, and I can somewhat relate to this from a different perspective, because I'm not hands-on. My sister is suffering from the onset of early dementia, and it's getting worse. So before we get into all of that, y'all, we getting ready to get into the real deal. We getting ready to take these shades off, because this is some truth you getting ready to see and hear. And can you hold your book up? Once we take these shades off, I need you to hold that book up. I ordered it, but I didn't get mine in time for the show. But caregivers.
The forgotten patient.
That part. You all, okay, let's take these shades off and let's get into this real truth here. I got some questions for you. Okay, yeah. My nephew He's going through it right now with my sister. Oh, I like how she did that, y'all. She got the glasses on because she can see clear, too. Now, see, somebody, okay, for those of you who don't wear shades, go get your glasses so you can see and hear clearly. All right? Perfect. I love it. I love it. So, nonetheless, my nephew is trying to do this all by himself. And he's a young man. He's in his early 30s. And we spoke with him last week about the mental madness that he must be going through as a son. And I'm not sure if you know or not, but I have a son that's going through a legal battle right now. And he spoke with his cousin, and he told his cousin, he said, fam, you're in a much better place than I am. And that it still stings me because it hurts. And I sat and I listened in to find out why would he say that. And he said, there's nothing worse than watching the matriarch of your heart deteriorate right in front of you, and you can't fix it. Nor can he said he couldn't fix it, nor was he equipped financially to handle it. And he's doing the best he can. And that hurt my heart. And now I was looking at it from his point of view as it being my sister and my nephew. Now I want to, because he couldn't articulate the way he really felt. He just know he's in a lot of pain. He said, Aunt Shawn, mentally, I don't know how much longer I can go through this. And he's having to bathe her. He's having to do all kinds of things that he never thought that he would do with his mother. And then if he asks her how she's doing, fine. And he's looking at her filthy, and she's used the restroom on herself. And he's like, no, mother, you're not fine. Stop saying you're fine. He started getting angry because he knows she's not fine, but she don't know she's not fine. So I have found ways to get him some help for him to mentally be able to understand the disease. But I'm going to make sure, I hope he's listening in, because he needs to hear from a doctor who has went through this, who has written a book on this for this reason. And I bought your book to give to him so he could write out his frustrations, because when he's storing so much in his mind and he has no outlet. And when he talks to me, it's like he just bubbles over with all of the stuff. And your book, I believe in my heart, is going to help a lot of people who are helping those who are going through this. Okay, I know there's two phases. There's Alzheimer's. Is it Alzheimer's or how do you say it? Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's. Okay, it's Alzheimer's. And that comes first. And then
Alzheimer's is a form of dementia.
Okay. See, I don't know.
It's a different type of dementia.
Okay.
But Alzheimer's is a form of dementia.
But dementia is the most drastic. Is that would be the most drastic phase? Is that, well, from what I'm...
I don't know if it's the most drastic. I know that when you reach in this phase of, even in Alzheimer's disease, there are phases.
Okay.
And so many, I've read so much material about the different phases. And the way my neurologist explained it to me in simplest terms, she said, it's a train going downhill, and it's just a matter of how fast it goes. And sometimes you don't know the phases until you're in another phase of it.
Okay, and I can understand that, because the way that my nephew's neurologist explained to him about his mother, and this doctor is so real, and so, I mean, he the reality coach doctor, you know, and I'm like, oh, let me put these on. I said, boy, he done hit me where it hurt at. Let me see if I can put some shades on it. Shade this up a little bit. He said, as far gone as my sister is, it's just a matter of time. And what he said is, she's moving so fast. She's moving like, and he said, for lack of better term, he said, in the speed of light almost, because she's going really fast. And he said, do not be surprised if a year from now, her mind tells her not to wake up.
Is she on medication? Because the medication is supposed to slow the process. It won't stop it, but it will slow it down.
Well, here's the deal with what I've observed with my sister is it's almost like she has select dementia when it works to her advantage, because they become very cunning.
When it, and that's the part of the book. That's
okay. The book. So I'm not making this up. Okay. Because I'm like, wait
no,
a minute.
No, for not making it up. And again, that was the purpose for writing the book.
Okay.
The book was to talk through, and I only have in here 12 emotions. I don't call them chapters. I call them emotions.
Good word.
I have 12 emotions because we have to understand that these are various emotions that the caregiver is feeling. I purposely made this book, as you have expressed, real. It is very authentic. I'm not using medical jargon. I say up front, I'm not a neurologist. I'm not an MD. I'm an EDD. I'm a doctor of education. So I specialize in education research, especially in health education.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the purpose of this book was, as you stated, to get out. So something I want to show you. So it within the chapters, after every chapter, you'll see a section that looks like this.
Oh, so that's basically like they can write their... Oh, wait a minute. Hold that back up. Hold that book back up, Dr. Hart. Okay, so you even took enough wherewithal to put tabs on it?
No.
Oh, those are your markings. Okay, I was going to say. Now, you're going to...
I have all my books.
Okay, but, okay.
This is the thing where at the top, after every chapter, it says, go ahead, let it out. Write your memory, story, scenario regarding this emotion. Because the prior chapter that you just read, I'm sure the reader is going to be able to relate. So take your son, your nephew, you say, right, your mm-hmm. nephew for an example. First of all, as a caregiver of any age, we have literally children are having to become caregivers to their parents. Children, literally 10, sometimes 8. They're small and they're teenagers. We have elderly trying to be caregivers. So first and foremost, I wanted to say that when God gave me the title, I went in and looked up the word patient, okay? And the word patient, and I'm looking at my book, it says, the word patient does not only mean a person under medical care. It also means undergoing the action of another in their provocation, annoyance, misfortune, delay, hardship, and pain. That is a Webster's Dictionary definition of a patient.
Okay, now that last little part that you read, delay in hardship and pain.
Delay, separate word, delay, hardship, and pain. In other words, as
wow.
a patient,
wow.
you are experiencing delay. So you too become a patient. You are the forgotten patient because your life is on hold.
That's
okay?
The one thing he talked about all the time. He said, "And Sean, I have no life. I gave up my life to come take care of my mother, and I have no life."
And the interesting part is, after 5 years,
mm-hmm.
I ended up having to. I was forced into the decision of putting my father in a home.
Wow.
And that's where, to me, his care worsened. So first of all, I want to say to the caregivers, you are more equipped than you realize. I want to say to the caregivers, you are heroes. I want to say this to the caregivers, okay? You are doing a great job. I want to say to the caregivers, you are making sacrifices, but God will reward you for your sacrifice. I want the caregivers to understand that you really do have the capacity to care for them better than a nursing facility. The difference with a nursing facility is they are trained with those sensitive areas such as quality. Because my father would literally go in the bathroom and quickly shut the door and lock it so I couldn't get in. But when I went and got a knife to fight to get in the bathroom, he had pooped all over the floor, all over the toilet. All boo-boo was, oh, and I'm saying boo-boo because put your glasses on. That's what we're not being etiquette is not in, in your mind. You're seeing feces, the medical term, feces, but we say boom, poof, whatever, on the walls. You're thinking, what have you done? And you're fighting with him to take his clothes off. My father, this is a man born in the 40s. He's ornery, he's private. Women don't look at me. So depending on the age of his mother, you're my son. You're not supposed to see my body. All this is happening to the caregiver. You're not just trying to get the boop up, okay? You're not, this is going beyond the boop. You're dealing with the reality of this is my dad's body, and I don't want to see my dad's body. I don't want to see him in this context. I don't want to see him like this. You know, so that's real. As you say, the reality code, that's real. We can't pretend that this thing is not affecting the person, you know, and it may be slightly different for a person taking care of a spouse because you've seen them new. But for a child taking care of a parent, this thing is serious. Mm-hmm. And even down to feeling like you have to discipline your family member. I became the parent to the point of, Dad, stop. Dad, put that down. Dad, come sit down.
Oh, wow.
Stop it. And I can't, we can't spank, hit, whip, whatever term you use growing
be.
Up, your dad. Beat your child. You can, when we were growing up, you did that. You got a whipping.
A beating down.
But you know, wait, if you love, honor, and respect your parents, you are not doing that. You're not going in there. But I literally had to say, Daddy, stop it. And it was like, we had, and I tell a story, I put some tabs in one of the books. I named my dad, I have these little faces. I was drawn, and I have short hair, but this is when my hair was long. I had long hair, three braids, crochet. And this is one of my artists, her name is Sarah Milan. She drew me as a cartoon character. Now, and she's drawing me with words like, I know you hear me. Because this is what this chapter is, ignoring and manipulating. So
great chapter. The chapter.
There's another chapter I labeled.
Okay, but just before you get through that, tell a little bit about how some of the ways that your father manipulated you.
Oh my gosh. Oh, Dad would hide things. Dad could hide that. Let me tell you. So I'm gonna see here. I'm trying to see one of the stories in here that I can put my hands on really quick that would just make you guys probably just fall out and laugh at my dad.
Well, while you're looking for that, let me tell you what my nephew said that my sister does. He said that he would be so excited sometimes because she's like, he's thinking she's excited to see him, but mm-hmm. really she's excited to see if he brought her some gummy bears. And he would be like, out of all the things, I'm thinking you're happy to see me after a long day, and you're talking about gummy bears. And they never forget. When their mind is set on what they want, it's almost like gummy bears, gummy bears. Did you bring me some gummy bears? No, I did not. You're not getting in. 2-3 minutes later, are you going to give me some gummy bears? Didn't? And my nephew be like, didn't I tell you I'm going to get?
It was Coke and Pepsi for my dad.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, you
Coke,
really got drunk crazy.
Coke or Pepsi, and I have a picture in this book that my sister-in-law sent me. See that picture there?
Uh-huh.
This is the picture, wrong side.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to see my
phone. Okay, there you go.
This is the picture over here.
Uh-huh.
This is the picture of Smucker jelly in a glass with ice.
Oh, did he have, you had to have it that way? He had to have it that way.
Yeah, he was trying to get to, he thought everything in the refrigerator was Coke in his mind. So he took an entire bottle of Smucker's jelly and poured it, because it's, you know, Coke is sweet. It's got sugar,
mm-hmm.
loads of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So he took the whole thing of jelly and poured it in a glass and put ice in it. And we had to call him. He would have took that jelly down thinking it was Coke.
And how is he going to drink that? He didn't. He would have did.
We have no idea. And that is the types of things the nephew is talking about.
Yes.
He was talking about what in the world? But at the same time, they will, my dad, he'll say, I'm taking my pills. I said, okay. I said, Dad, did you take your pills? He'll go, see? All pills gone. The pill will be pushed back under his tongue. The pill, he would know how to spin it and put it in his pocket. He would take the pill and throw it behind his head real quick and put his hand down.
And just
be, go and do all the motions like it's all down.
That's what my, and when you asked if she take her medicine, I was like, we don't know, because she's so slick at it, we don't know.
That's part of some of the lies. And I even say in the chat, okay, I know you guys are probably saying, Monica, why are you using words like lie or manipulate? That's how the caregiver feels.
And that's what they are doing.
And my dad looked right in my face. I gave my dad probably this much of water. Y'all don't laugh at my cup. I gave him about that much of water. I said, Daddy, now drink this water. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I walked out of the room and came back. But I was coming back right when he was pouring it out. Dad poured the water out. He turned around and said, Dad, you drank the water? He said, awesome. Real good. I said, hey, did you just pour the water out? No, I didn't pour the water out. I drank all that water. And I'm going, and it's so, if you don't see it yourself, you will be amazed at the day and the hour I put into setting little traps to catch him. I had to hide in closets. You guys, this book will make you guys laugh. I had to hide in closets. I had to set the door, shut it really hard, and make it where if in the middle of the night I can hear doors opening. I had to hide Daddy's shoes.
Did your father ever start walking off? You had to keep an eye on him?
He did wander.
Oh, my goodness.
He wandered so bad in Orlando because, you know, my brother came and got him to go to Orlando so they can give me a break. All caregivers need a break, and that's what your nephew needs. He needs a break. I cannot emphasize that enough. And they called and told me, you're not going to believe it. They said he went outside, and this is one of the chapters in my book. He got in a car with a total stranger to go get a Coke.
They do that.
We're so grateful that the person was kind. I don't know how he managed to figure out how to call my brother. I don't know. He probably got his wallet. I think we got my dad the little thing on his bracelet for the ID. He probably looked and called my brother. But I don't know what he said, but the person took him to the store and called my brother.
Wow.
But when you think of what could have happened.
Honey, that's the God, that's them prayers, them effectual fervent prayers of the righteous availeth me much. Yes, indeed.
It is so when I say there's chapters on confusion, there's chapters on the unexplainable, you know, when you're talking to your parents and they literally, you think they cannot hear. My father, literally, there were times I'm going, I literally had to call the doctor. Does Alzheimer's affect their ability to hear? She's like, no, not really. They just ignoring you. And when I say it's to the point of daddy,
he ignores. Mhm. My sister does that well, and he'll have to say something like, he'll have to say her trigger, gummy bears, and she hears it instantly. What you say?
Yes. Yes.
But you just...
Yes.
Wow.
And we were in the kitchen once, and Dad went to get, he was going to get something out of the oven. And I said, Daddy, no. So I go trying to get in front of him, and I'm reaching over to get the mitt, the oven mitt, so I can take it out of the oven. In his hastiness, they have this super willpower. I can do it on my own. I don't need your help. He reached his hand in that oven and touched that pan and snatched it back. And in my, here's a shade moment. I'm going, you know.
I got it, girl. I got it for you.
Thank you. It was one of them caregiver moments of, that you won't do that no more.
Like your mama used to do you. You don't believe it's hot. Okay, go ahead. I bet you won't do that no more.
That moment, I'm so sympathetic. I'm upset with you. I'm upset with you because you just literally stick your hand in the oven when I just said stop, Daddy, and you didn't stop. So the book is designed, and okay, so I originally wrote the book thinking of all of the grumpy cartoon characters. The number one character was Yosemite Sam. I know you guys can dig your mind back. Yosemite Sam was this little short cowboy who used to run around on Looney Tunes, and he would curse, but he never used the curse words we use. And he would say something like, you, Rick, whack, freaking, and all I could see, and the cartoons would illustrate smoke coming out of his ears. So in this cartoon, I'm looking at that scene, and then I'm standing in the kitchen at my dad because my dad had, he wet his clothes overnight. He was embarrassed, so thanks for having the shade on. He was embarrassed. He took the wet underwear and put them in the drawer with the clean clothes because he was hiding them. But for some reason, he got this particular pair, and he wanted to dry them without knowing. So he put them in the microwave.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm laughing with you because you have to laugh. It is too hilarious.
I pray you guys, y'all are going to laugh. And remember, let me put a disclaimer out for everyone watching this live. We're not laughing at our loved ones. We're not laughing at these unkind beings. We have to laugh at the caregiver needs a release. If you don't do this, you're going to go crazy. Again, glad you have a shades on. This is about caregivers loving in another language. Okay? Mm-hmm. So in that moment, this is me. Keep the glasses on. In this moment, I'm in the kitchen. I go, first of all, what is that popping? Because, you know, some underwear have a little snap. The kind back in the day, they used to snap. They didn't have on the modern day. He had on the ones with a little snap. So you got a snap in my microwave. So you hear spot something going. I go open the microwave really quick. And I'm going, so he's on. So I'm going, what's wrong? So I have no sympathy right now. I have no compassion right now. I am having a 100% you give me this damn moment, like, no, you don't have to fall in my microwave. So I'm going, what in the world? So wild.
Girl, you got my eyes wide. I got to take my, let me give you some.
I get him out, and we're in the kitchen, you guys, just struggling with the underwear. They wet.
The microwave.
Do I throw away my microwave or just bleach?
See,
see, in my mind with these shades on, that's my mind immediately was, what did she do with the microwave?
They probably keep the shades on because anybody outside looking in, their sympathy is going to go to the patient, the Alzheimer's patient.
No, my sympathy would have went to you because I'd have been on your side. Now, he know that. Now, see, we don't understand it, so we'd have been on your side. I know I would have. Now, you know, now he know, and had my hand on my hip. Now, he know daggum me well. That ain't no riot.
But in his mind, he remembered it gets hot.
Oh.
But he did not remember wrong appliance. Wrong. It's like, I got to fix this because in his mind, I'm in my right mind. I'm fine. I don't need her. I'm going to fix this problem and we will resolve it. And she doesn't even have to know. Thank God, microwave, I caught it when I did because sparks were flying. It was really not good.
And wait a minute, Dr. Hardy, was he just standing there looking at it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because the mind... See, the mind doesn't work like that anymore. Bossy knew the spark was a part of the cleaning process. I don't know. But we don't know, but we're standing there. We want to be a help. They're fighting the help. They're embarrassed. They're hurt. But the caregiver, we have it all. We also, in addition to what they're feeling, because I do, in hindsight, I cried over that. I cried because he was embarrassed. I'm his daughter. Once in his mind, it had to be, I'm a grown man, and I wet myself. That's embarrassing. So my heart goes out.
So that was mentally taxing on him. And I think sometimes it seems like my sister, from what I've seen, And the thing about it, what's so hard, it's like you said, your father was a well-dressed man, well-groomed, loved to be clean. My sister was so clean and loved designer, everything, just always dressed very nice. And to see her like she is and to think that she's dressed like she normally would be dressed, and when she goes and dresses up, it's like, okay, did Bozo the clown, Homie the clown, had to dress you? Because it was just all over the place. And she would come in, I'm ready. And we look like, you know how people give you that look. No, you're not ready. Because first of all, you stink still. You haven't washed your body.
And they don't. When you
the bathtub is a scary thing.
Going through the process, you don't want to bathe. You're fighting them to bathe. They're fighting you. They don't, and I really think Daddy would step in the shower, turn around, because I don't think he knew what soap was. I would put the soap, and I had to, it was like, okay, Daddy, I'm going to step out the bathroom, take your clothes off, and I would keep control of the door. Don't look at me. I'm not looking, Daddy. I'm on this side of the door, because I'm trying to give him the utmost respect. Daddy, I'm not looking at you, but take off your clothes and hand them to me. So he's handing me the pieces. So I said, are you undressed, Dad? Yes. So I had to, A, make sure the water was running and warm, not too hot, not too cold. I said, now get in. Are you under the water? Daddy, get under the water. I will be standing outside the door. Daddy, get under the water. He would, then I can hear, and you don't know. So, because he won't let you in that bathroom. He's ready to jump out and fight you if he says, so I had towels all over the floor. In the event he stepped out the shower, he wouldn't slip. So I had to think ahead on everything. I had to have the clothes already on the bed when he's going to put on. I had to have the water warm. If it's too hot, he won't get in. If it's too cold, he won't get in. I had to have towels that I just got out of the dryer and they were warm. Because he was always cold. I had to go put the soap on the washcloth ahead of time and say, Daddy, pick up that washcloth. That was right there. Or either I would step in the bathroom and hand him a washcloth behind the curtain. I used to have to instruct him, Daddy, rub the cloth on your body. You know, bath time was over an hour. and you don't do it nightly because it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
They're fighting on every angle. They're fighting on you helping them in, helping them out, getting their clothes. She would tell you, don't pick up my clothes like that. Girl, you don't pick up your clothes. You better be glad I'm not throwing them in the garbage. Because this is a mess. Oh.
And everything is, it's really, and when my dad would get in the bed, everything is a process. He would get in the bed. He would say, jump up. It's cold, cold. The sheet, you know, when you first turn your bed back, the sheet feel a little cool. Most people like that.
Love it.
Not that. Daddy is cold. And it's funny, I'm cold natured myself. So I'm going, okay. So I would think, okay, put a towel in the dryer. Put the towel on top of the sheet so he can lay on a warm towel. Otherwise, he would not get in the bed.
Wow.
So after he had the towel on, yeah, and then he wanted a heater on. It is 80 degrees outside. He wanted a heater to be on in the bed. So in the middle of the night, I go in and turn that heater off. Okay. Now, mind you, he has on, and this is in the book. Mind, this is on the ending, not chapter, emotion, cold, cold. That's what it's called. So wow. People always say, it's cold, cold.
And my sister's the opposite. Monica, she was walking in winter with no shoes on. It's freezing outside. And we're like, you don't have on any shoes. She said, it's not cold. And we out there, girl, come on. And she looking at us like, something's wrong with us. So I understand what you're saying about him being hot, hot, but he was cold. She was hot, hot. He was cold, cold. Wow.
Ooh. Cold, cold, cold. And, but now you, daddy had on 2 pair of underwear, 2 t-shirts, 2-3 pairs of socks, and the pajamas on top. I'm not telling you. I promise.
I know, because my sister was walking with no shoes on, and it was winter.
And then he has blankets on the bed. Then he has the heater going in the room. Now,
it's 80 degrees outside?
Yes, we're in Florida. Oh. So now, daddy got to get up in the middle of the night in the bathroom. So mind you, he's sweating. Because he got all the clothes. He's sweating. What happens when you sweat and pull the covers off? You instantly feel what?
Cold.
Because the wetness of your clothes. Well, daddy did not understand how the body works anymore. He didn't understand sweat. Don't understand. So now he wakes up upset. Monica, I'm rushing in the middle of the night. I got ripped out of my sleep because I'm thinking he's falling out of bed.
Out of the 2 hours that you finally get into. Okay.
Exactly. So I jump up. What's that? I'm cold. I said, Daddy, you're wet. You're sweating. He don't know what sweat is. So I'm going, well, Daddy, you have on all of these clothes. And because of all these clothes, your body is perspiring. He doesn't know what perspiration means. So now I'm thinking, now what do I do? Because so now when you spoke of your nephew not knowing what to do, I just went through a 40-minute process of getting you in the bed. I'm drying towels, making them warm. I got heaters on. I'm going through so many extremes to bring you some level of comfort so you will go to sleep so I can get a moment.
You didn't even, at that point, I don't think my nephew even cares about sleep. He just cares about peace.
Yeah. So what I call this caregivers, the forgotten patient. This is a journey. That's why I said I'm keeping the word journey because it's a journey, and this is just 12 emotions that I talk about, 12 stories. But it was my aunt already recommended possibly a volume 2 where caregivers around the world will write in and send me in their story. And if the more different their stories are, I can create a book with different stories, different emotions. And I can also have a space where they can give strategy.
Wow.
How did you coping strategies?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the next phase of caregivers, the forgotten patient.
Beautiful.
So I really hope that the book, my prayer was that the book goes across the globe and gives get into the hands of every caregiver. And I wrote it in a way where it's not taxing on your eyes. The font is double spaced. The font, because the last thing you need is a little old book that you can't see.
And you're already mentally tired and drained, and you don't,
I wanted it to be literally a joyous, the caregiver needs an outlet. I'm sorry. I know we don't like to use the word yet, but it's a release. And because they have to go in and do it another day, there's another hour, there's another moment. And when I started writing this and telling the story, in the middle of writing, I would burst out laughing. But that was just a release I did. I was reading, and so to me, if it was helping me while I'm writing, I know it's going to come. There's a caregiver going to say to me, oh my God, I know exactly. Somebody knows what I'm talking about. That's what I want.
And I think it would be a good thing for, is it convalescent homes, nursing homes, the old folks place, that whatever, for people to have that, maybe read, because when you're going into these line of these fields of specialties as work, you really need to know what you're getting into before you enter in, because you may make it look easy. And that's what we are in America, I can say. Like, example giving me, people think talking to people and meeting people and interviewing and doing all these things is easy because it looks easy. It's not easy. I don't know you, but I know how to talk with you. A lot of people either talk at you or for you or against you. A lot of people don't know how to talk with you. And people, I've never met Dr. Monica Hardy, but the way we're talking, you would think that we've known each other. So people look at this like it's an easy thing, and they want to go and do this. But when they get into it, that's when they sell their self. Forgive me, and y'all know I'm going to keep it real. I am one journalist, or journalist, radio personality, that you can't buy. Because my mind is money. Money ain't on my mind. What's on my mind is making sure to liberate the minds of people in order to transform lives. And I am so unorthodox that people get on me all the time. You need to give stats and all that. I said, why? No, we're giving you the tools. This is, your book is a tool. You can't write their emotions after each chapter. You've shared yours. Now it's your turn. Don't take Dr. Hardy's word for it. Write your own. And this book is something that I think should be like a prerequisite for people to look and go through the journey of going beforehand before they become on hand.
And you know, it's very interesting that you say that in this book. As you say, writing out emotions, I often have prayed and asked God, why am I so connected to people's emotions? And I know without a doubt, and it has been stated to me by multiple of my very close friends, that God is giving you a heart of compassion. You can see people. You can connect. I feel like I almost connect with people in their emotions first. Before I even, and my mom would say, you have to catch a fish before you can clean it. And I used to go, wow, mom. So at first I didn't like that. I'm like, God, why do I always have to get, why am I so emotionally caught up? But you have to tap into this. This, what I went through with my dad was rewarding, but it was painful.
Yeah.
Painful. I reprimanded my dad one day. I got on him, and I ran in my room, jumped in my bed, pulled the covers over my head, and cried like I was 6 years old. And my sons, I have two sons. One is 19 now, one is 27 now. They were not that age at the time, but they were older. They were going into adulthood. They said, Granddaddy, sit down. And they ran in the room, and both of my sons got in the bed with me and just held me. They're like, Mom, you didn't mean to do it. and I just want to cry thinking about it.
Look, I'm emoting. See, I got a heart of compassion too. Look, let me put my shades on. So,
my sons, they were like, Mom, okay, you wasn't fussing at Dad. You were not disrespecting him. So come on, get out the bed. I could not. It was in the early stages. I could not face myself because it was like, you have totally disrespected your dad because I became his parent.
Hmm.
And I felt so bad about getting on my dad that day. And by the time I walked back to the kitchen to fix his meal, Daddy had forgot. Hey, baby, what I'm eating? You got my bread?
they get on that food now.
Dad loved bread. Mm-hmm. So Dad was on to bread. My feelings are still in the toilet. Still almost to the point of being unable to face him. And he has totally forgot. And that's the other thing that in support of the caregiver, our emotions are still connected to what you said to us 3 days ago. And you have no clue what you said 3 days ago. But you could have cursed. My daddy has thrown a fist at me. My daddy has said, I will hit you, knock you out. My dad has wished blindness on my children. My dad had to have surgery on his eyes. And because of the pain that he was in and his inability to understand, my son was trying to put eye drops in his eyes. He was like, come on, granddaddy, lift your head. And he got so angry. He was like, when you get older, you're going to get what happened to you. I said, stop it. I ran from the back of the house because I was like, you will not speak that over my children. I said, just stop. And most people will say, oh, Monica, that's just a disease. These are words. The atmosphere don't know all times. The atmosphere, word is life or death is in the power of your tongue. And you, the patriarch of this family, will not speak blindness or surgical issues over my children's eyes.
That's fine.
So there's a whole other side of me that had to raise up and go, stop it. Because when you start talking about mental, when you start talking about things like the mind, the way your mind works is powerful. You know, and a week ago, just this past Wednesday, I did an entire kids broadcast on the mind, according to Dr. Caroline Leaf, a scientist / believer, talking about being transformed by the renewing of your mind. The mind controls the brain, not the other way around. So even with these unkind diseases, we have to speak life. We have to open up our mouth and take authority over atmosphere. We got to take authority over words. We have to, even when our families are sick, we got to say, listen, you will not speak that way. You are fine. Open your mouth. You have to take authority over this thing because there's a lot of things going on. Because
we fight, we wrestle not against flesh and blood,
but against principalities, spiritual wickedness in high places. These things are real. So of all the things happening, you know, we and she was saying in her study how they took the word of God and put it in full application over people that had traumatic brain injuries and watched how these people had the ability to think right. I said, Lord, some of the things had I known, I would have done it differently. I have prayers in the end of this book.
Wow.
I have things that you do to help caregivers in this book. But one of the biggest things that you can do is pray. Pray for caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
Pray for the family member with this unkind disease. Pray for the mind. Pray, anoint their head with oil. Speak in their ear. And yes, you do have to discipline and take authority.
Mm-hmm.
You do. You have to take authority. So it is very important. And so I know caregivers has become a ministry for me now. I know it has through this book. I plan on being on every TV, radio. I'm sending information to celebrities, talk show hosts, anything I can do. And that's why I appreciate you so much, Lori. I appreciate you so much. And I love the name of your broadcast, Reality Coach, because to be honest, people want you to be real.
They want you to be real.
They cannot, you cannot do anything if you're not going to be real with people. You can give people, I've been through, and I love the Alzheimer's Association. Kudos to them. They do an amazing job at giving you the support, the tools, the resources, the definitions, and everything. But I just wanted to create something that was the, how you say, real deal, holy deal, shades on. Let me give it to you from the mouth of a caregiver.
And ain't nothing, and you know, like my, like the old folks used to say, ain't nothing like an educated fool. So I tell people, I don't care how many degrees you got. I don't care how many doctors and all, and no offense to those who have it. I'm just keeping it 100% real. Until I can't understand living this life, even though there are some people who are educated in the dementia, in the Alzheimer's disease, but if you have not walked in the shoes of someone who has had to be a caregiver, education can only take you so far. But let me tell you what I know. Experience is God's wisdom that can take you afar.
Yes.
Beyond
yes.
where you are.
I'm going, as a matter of fact, there is an Alzheimer's caregiver support group tomorrow right down the street here in Orange Park at the Osbury Methodist Church. And I go on Tuesdays at 5:30 because I want to sit among the families. I'm going to even ask the sponsor if she will mind me praying for the family because I feel led to do so. Pray to these families. I am marketing the book as best I can. I'm reaching out, and I have, and you're absolutely right. I have my godson, who he is in a nursing facility. He's a patient. But he said, Mom, I'm sitting here, and he's going to be calling because he's familiar with the nursing home environment. So he knows, Mom, I can talk to the activity directors. I can see when they have a family day and if they will allow you to come in and talk to the family.
And even the senior citizens, the senior homes, where they, because a lot of people, and see, you could be very instrumental in helping them hone into certain things because there are things that give you like being addicted to a substance. You get a twitch or you get a taste, but you can see the onset of change coming because you've experienced it. And I love that song, that old song, Experience is a Good Teacher. It takes someone like me to know.
It's that love of the new
management. And that's what this is. You're loving your father and anyone with this ill, this unkind disease, any disease, you're loving under new management. It just doesn't work. We have less than a minute. Do you have a quick prayer that you can read from the back of your book?
Yes.
Okay, and we can close out with that.
Yes, I do. Now, this prayer here was written by, because I wrote a sundowning prayer.
Okay.
That's at 5 in the morning. But here's a general prayer written by Bruce McIntyre. It said, unknown and often unknown, you are a hero nonetheless. For your love, sacrifice, walk by faith in the darkness of the great unknown, and your courage, even in weakness, gives life to your beloved. You hold shaking hands and provide the ultimate care, your presence, the knowing that you are simply there. You rise to the face, the giant of disease and despair. It is your finest hour, though you may be unaware. You are resilient, amazing, and beauty excel. You are the caregiver, and you have done well.
Wow, beautiful. Well, ladies, gentlemen, lookers, knowers, don't know, want to see, don't want to see, but you heard it. Thank you, Dr. Monica Hardy, for being so wonderful. And we definitely got to have you revisit us because you were so informative. Dr. Monica Hardy, thank you so much. Be blessed, my sister. Thank you. Have a great day.
You do the same.
Bye.
Bye-bye.